because labels don't heal, right? Like there's no healing in the label. It's like, okay, we got the label. Now what? You know, I was given the label at 15. It was just like, there's your label. Here's your medication to concentrate. But there was no healing in experience. So to me, that's where the juice is like, how do we like meet people more holistically in their experience and give them what they need from a foundational level?
Hi, friend. Welcome to the Reframing Neurodiversity podcast. If you're a neurodivergent mom raising neurodivergent kids and navigating the ups and downs of life with a more highly sensitive nervous system, this is your place. Hi, I'm Melissa Jackson. In this space, I'm sharing with you the things I've personally learned along my journey as an educator, a parent, an advocate, and as a neurodivergent person myself. If you're ready to embrace your differences as the unique gifts that they are and start showing up for yourself in ways that empower you and build self-confidence so that you can pass down a new way to your kids, you're in the right spot. My mission in life is to support people in embracing their differences and to remind us that we're all uniquely wired for a reason, with different strengths and challenges and specific gifts we're here to contribute. Each week, I'll be sharing ways we can start reparenting ourselves so we can begin shifting generational cycles and showing up for ourselves and our kids in ways we feel proud of and that allow us to start embracing our authentic ways of thriving in the world. I believe that when we get to the root of our symptoms and start healing from the inside out, we not only heal ourselves, but we heal our kids too. We all know we're different, yet we're still acting like there's one right way to be. Let's talk about it. Welcome back. I am super excited to be talking with my friend Megan Barnett, who is an executive function coach and a personal friend of mine that we met in graduate school and someone who's been on this journey with me of really trying to support neurodivergent families, particularly students and families with ADHD from a more holistic, strength-based, compassionate lens. So I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. It's so good to sit down again with you. And, you know, we always have these conversations, our personal phone conversations. We're like, we need to come back and chat about kind of what's happening since grad school and also just this past year.
Absolutely. Because I feel like we were both in school with a certain lens. And I feel like even just post that experience, so many things have happened in our own lives and just sort of ahas clicking and things coming out in the field that have really made us come back to this conversation of like, what's actually at the root here of ADHD? How do we really truly support people in a way that builds confidence, that's sustainable, that helps them thrive? And there's just so many elements to this conversation that I know we both really find interesting. And so I'm just excited to dive into this with you today. Do you want to tell people a little bit about kind of what you do and what you're about?
Yes. So I run an executive function. I hate the word coaching, but it's a coaching business, right? Yeah. So I work with neurodivergent students, mainly kiddos with ADHD, anxiety, depression, OCD, learning differences. And so I work with the students one-on-one, trying to better understand how we can make their learning environment more supportive for their learning style, better match who they are as a kiddo, their nervous system needs, their learning needs. And then just like one-on-one homework support, helping them build some of these executive function strategies of time management, planning and prioritization, emotional regulation. And that one always kind of is a little ping for me because it's not about suppressing big emotions, or it's rather understanding emotions, why they're coming up, right? When you're out of your window of tolerance. So all these good things, and then working with the families and the parents or the caretakers so that we're really all practicing these different strategies, integrating these different strategies and tools, just helping us all kind of gain a better understanding from this neurobiological lens. So I had my practice in Austin, Texas, still supporting families there, but now just opened a cozy little space in San Clemente, California. So I moved to Southern California and opened the doors to the office about 2 months ago. So really exciting.
Yeah, so exciting.
By the ocean for me.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so I'm so curious. You mentioned emotional regulation, which you know is a big passion area for me to better understanding in supporting our nervous systems as neurodivergent people. Do you feel like that is a component you see a lot in the kids that you work with, like struggling with things that are more stemming from dysregulation, but it could present more like anxiety or burnout or even depression? Because there's so much in the literature now and in my experience, my lived experience, that connects trauma and the symptoms of particularly ADHD. And so I'm just curious if you see that a lot in the kids that you work with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and you and I have talked about this a lot, it's kind of like an untangling and figuring out, like getting curious about some of the roots. So I think whenever I work with students, what I tell parents, if a parent has done like a formal neuropsychological evaluation, where we're looking at different mental health components, right? Like anxiety, depression, complex PTSD, we're screening for those because they can so closely mimic ADHD symptoms almost to a T. It's pretty. Yeah. And another component from my own personal experience recently, but that has come to my attention, and now it's kind of put a light on some other, just, you know, some certain behaviors, burnout, like chronic stress. It really does mimic ADHD, and just that cognitive fatigue, just like a deep cognitive fatigue. It's just super fascinating because all of it impacts the prefrontal cortex. So all of it is, when I'm doing executive function support, no matter what the root is, we can still come up with some strategies or some supports to better support the executive function needs. But what I realized in my own practice, always kind of intuitively felt this, but now it's really coming through, is that there's this huge nervous system component that I feel like is just starting to emerge in our field, this nervous system awareness, where we've really got to start addressing that versus just looking at the child's behavior or symptoms, right? And instantly like medicating them or someone saying, just come up with executive function strategies that fix it. It's much deeper. And when we get to the kind of that root, that nervous system root, I see tremendous shifts. And also this ability for the brain to then better access the executive function tools we're trying to build.
Right. Well, and it makes sense.
For you. Mm-hmm.
Think about it. It's like when we're dysregulated, we're in a state of fight, flight, freeze, you know, survival state in our nervous system. We literally don't have access to our prefrontal cortex. So we're offline, right? We're working from the survival part of our brain. So if you're providing kids with these tools and strategies that are to support their challenges with executive function, but they don't have access to their prefrontal cortex, are these strategies actually working?
So it's, yes. Sometimes close my computer at the end of the night and have this existential crisis as well. Like, oh my God. So what I've seen, what I will say is, so we're peeling back layers of an onion, right? And so what I have noticed is, so a lot of students that come to me or families that come to me, the story I hear very frequently is, my child is really struggling in school. They're not turning in their assignments. They're drowning in assignments. I, as the parent, don't even know how to access the online portal to figure out what to do. Everything was okay up until high school, and then we crashed and burned. So what's curious is like the first, I usually work with families for a minimum of 3 months, but the first month, so I would say 70% of the families that come to me, that's where they're at, is kind of triage, and we're just like lifeboating. And so we're trying to integrate some systems and strategies that are supporting these executive function skill sets, right, that are like really weakened or just not able to be accessed, right?
Yeah.
And so I will say that, well, first, again, this is kind of may feel more woo-woo, but from an energetic perspective, we're trusting a process. We're working as a team versus being really fear-based and panicked. So suddenly there's this shift and we're like, okay, we've got we're listening to the student. There's always moments where there's a question of, should this child be in this learning environment? So if the answer is we're staying in the learning environment, we're going to try to support them in this learning environment at home and at school, then we kind of build this team and we start these small steps. And so I will say what I notice is a lot of kiddos who I start working with are definitely burnout, or there is some component of chronic stress and just shutdown. I see a lot of like the disassociation, the freeze. And then once we start supporting or creating these like support scaffolding systems, then I almost notice, not always, that their nervous system can kind of come back to a more regulated state because it's not so bombarded or shut down. And then I really do see probably in like months 4 to 6, them being able to access some and apply some of these strategies. Like you said, remember, their working memory kind of comes back online in some aspects, and then they're able to access these strategies. But to your point, I always say to parents, if a child is really in a deep depression or a child is experiencing significant OCD, we can't access these strategies. This isn't what we need to work on first.
No. Yeah. And even as I hear you speak, it almost seems to me like the strategies are starting to work because you're not directly being like, oh, I'm supporting your nervous system, but you are. You're co-regulating. You're creating a sense of safety. They're not feeling alone. You're providing them with guidance. All of that is regulating the nervous system so that they can then eventually receive and process and implement the tools. Right?
Yeah. And it's almost like mirroring. Right. So we're mirroring, and my job is to help the parents also mirror that we have some strategies, we have a direction. And the other component, right, emotional regulation, is where now the adults are mirroring. We don't need to panic. Yeah. We don't need to say hurtful things about ourselves. I'm the stupidest person. I'll never get this done. We're mirroring how we navigate challenge and how we kind of maybe strengthen or build this tolerance for discomfort. But also there's a huge part of validation that comes from this. Like one of the biggest communication strategies that I work on with parents and educators and anyone interacting with this child is they need to know that they feel heard, like that, right? Because if we just kind of plow through and we're like, we're going to help you get all your assignments in, that's not addressing how the child is feeling. And where they're at and their experience.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And that's the piece that I am so passionate about bringing in, is that like that connection. It's like these foundational pieces of like regulating the nervous system, establishing connection between the parent and the child. And because without that, I think we're like throwing these things at them, but they still have, like you just said, the narratives of like, I'm so stupid, or why can't I get this right? Or like, and then they're feeling, and because ADHDers, neurodivergent people are more highly sensitive. So they're feeling energetically a disapproval of whoever that is, the parents, the teacher, the world of like, I'm not doing this right. Like most people get this and I don't. Why don't I? Like that negative thought loop and like bringing them back to a new narrative where they not only are like told like, oh, don't say that about yourself, you're so smart, but they like feel that connection from the adult in their life is what's going to regulate their nervous system and actually create this change into a new way. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And I think, yeah, as you're saying this, I think the automatic negative thoughts, right? That's one of the many lessons we do, the ants with the kiddos. And so that negativity bias can be much stronger in a neurodivergent neurotype, right?
Yeah.
A rejection sensitive dysphoria can also be very strong.
Oh, yeah.
And so just even from, it's funny, I'm working with a new kiddo, totally fine in school. We're just doing executive function stuff. And we have these really profound conversations about the brain. Like that's all we do. We just sit down for 45 minutes. And sometimes I find a lot of my students, they do like to intellectualize it and like better understand. And while from a somatic perspective, right, we need to feel these things. We need to, it's so important to understand what's going on in the body and feel it. But I also think that there is, like, I know from my own experience as a child who was highly anxious, understanding why my brain would click into rumination or would spiral was so profoundly helpful because I realized there wasn't anything wrong with me. It was just, this is how my brain was responding.
Yeah. No, I totally understand what you're saying. Because in the somatic world, they say overthinking is an underfeeling problem. Like when we're intellectualizing our feelings, we're up here. And so it's like when we're doing that, we're not in our bodies to actually process whatever is going on. And so I fully believe that. And I know for myself, as someone who is an overthinker in the process of, you know, healing that.
Yeah, right. I'm right there with you.
Yes. I mean, the intellectualizing, you know, my emotions has been my whole life. But I found a lot of safety there. And I don't want to totally bash that either, because I do feel like there's some relief in understanding, whether it's trauma, whatever it is, understanding the root of like why things are happening it can make you feel better, but I think it can be a slippery slope that leads to rumination and just like, and then that keeps us disconnected from our bodies. And that's where like the tools with getting into our bodies with emotional regulation strategies is really helpful, because I think so many of us, a lot of ADHDers are overthinkers, which leads to underfeeling.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Or such deep feeling that there's, yeah, that
overwhelming.
It can swing the other way. Yeah. And feeling so isolated in your deep feeling.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really curious. I think the other component to this that you and I have chatted about, when I meet with a new student or a new family, I've noticed in my own life, just observationally, I think that in general, our society is just go, 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 right? It's just keep producing, right? And school is kind of like that. A lot of my kiddos, they're like, it just doesn't stop. They get a winter break and they get their summer break.
Totally. And they're burnt out.
They're so burnt out.
They're burnt out, yeah.
Yeah. And so we're in this kind of this society that it's, you know, for as a business owner, right, this boss babe, like, create, produce, grow your business. I think I'm not a parent myself, but what I hear from my clients is, you know, they're like, I can't stop. I can't slow down. Mm-hmm. And so how powerful is that to be able to start to reframe and take back control of, we are going to pause. Like I've had families who've taken their child out just for a week in school and saying, it's okay. We need a break. We need to pause and we need to reset. And this is what we do. And there's no shame around it and there's no guilt. And, you know, I had reached out to you earlier this month experiencing symptoms of complete chronic burnout and, you know, feeling in myself like, oh, how I can't stop. I need to support my students and my clients, and had to get really quiet with myself and realize, just like I'm coaching the parents, we can't pour from an empty cup.
Mm-hmm.
We can't support anybody when we're feeling empty as well. So it's just kind of all these trickle down effects of the mirroring as the adults, even the children are telling us we need a break and that's okay. And I think it's important for us to start shifting the perspective in the new year.
Permission to slow down. And it's tricky because our school system, the way it's set up for kids, like you really think about it, it's like, it's so unfair. Like who as adults wants to, like, we were just talking about this before we started recording, like how is your morning? Like both of us have, like, we know that we need a slower morning. We both need to get outside and move our bodies. And like, we don't get into our flow until like noon, we were just saying, you know what I mean? But then we force kids to get out of bed super early and go sit in a chair and do all of these regimented things on someone else's program without any like say or choice or what am I interested in, or, you know, and you wonder why they feel overwhelmed and dysregulated. And by the time they get to a break, they're in burnout, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, and you, like, get, you wonder why so many adults are trying to heal. Yeah.
Exactly. And then we've got this whole generation of adults with trauma and overwhelm and burnout who are trying to keep up and then shaming themselves because they can't keep up with a lifestyle or a system that's really unsustainable and not working for most people. But we've like been so conditioned that this is like the way it's done. It is, yeah. And I feel like it's what's leading to a lot of homeschooling with families. I feel like younger families, more and more people I'm finding are like this, that are a little bit more like into conscious parenting and gentle parenting, or like this isn't working. Like even if it's a hybrid situation where they go to school a couple of days, but just putting your kid in school from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. to sit at a desk, especially when you're neurodivergent, like, yeah, you're going to be burnt out.
Or just anybody. Yeah. Or
anyone, right? Like literally anyone. Uh-huh. Yes. Especially people who are more highly sensitive, who need more movement in order to regulate. Like, but everybody, honestly, it's like not like, why do we do it like that? Doesn't make any sense anymore.
It creates workers. It creates compliance, right? Right. And so I think, yes, you and I are just, I think our year after grad school, we learned so many incredible things, but also it really made us, for me at least, it was a lot of deep pondering of the why of the systems. And so I there are some families who I'll get on the phone with, and I always say, usually in the beginning of a discovery call, I'm curious, have you ever considered an alternative learning environment?
Yeah. And
a lot of parents will say, you know, I work these set hours. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very busy. There's no other option. And so so a lot of what I do is also meeting people where they're at. Cause right. And so part of that could also be just saying, you know, if your child is in a traditional public school, how can we better integrate breaks and that autonomy within like their IEP or their 504? I have some kids who frequently take half days. Like it's just, I think we're seeing just the shift of, right, you and I chatted about this during COVID. We saw this crazy skyrocket of diagnosis of ADHD.
Right. Yeah.
And I was always curious, first off, how is everybody being diagnosed with ADHD? Are they doing neuropsychological evaluations, or are they doing the questionnaires at the doctor's office, which are very, very different?
Yeah.
Like, right. And so uncovering, is this ADHD, and not discrediting ADHD diagnoses, right? But is it ADHD, or is it chronic burnout? Is it the fact that school went completely on screens during that time? There was reduced socialization, you know, like all these different factors that deeply impact a nervous system.
Mm-hmm. And create symptoms that look very similar to ADHD.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even talk about bring in like just all of the uncertainty and the anxiety and the loss that was happening during that time.
And disconnection from other people, which is what helps us to co-regulate.
Co-regulate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's very curious, because we can look at clinical ADHD, and then we can look at depression symptoms, anxiety symptoms, OCD symptoms. Grief is another thing that's recently come through my door. And I, not me personally, but a couple little kiddos and diagnosed with ADHD, but had very traumatic or something very, very like deep grieving. Yeah. And those symptoms, right, of grief, right? Difficulty focusing, just like energy drain, just so much emotional strain that looks like some of the challenges to task initiate, right, with ADHD.
For sure.
To plan and prioritize and get tasks accomplished. So it's really, really curious. It's just kind of a curious time for me in my field. Just not question. I wouldn't say questioning, but more the word curious.
Yeah, because that's, you're in shutdown. Like if you're procrastinating and can't task initiate, your nervous system is basically in that bottom of the ladder, that shutdown space. And it's like, is that happening because you're grieving? And that's valid. And that's how your body, like a natural response to an appropriate situation. Mm-hmm. Or is it your neurowiring? You know, and I feel like I've had clients come across my desk as well, where even the neuropsych, like the psychologist, is hesitant to diagnose. Like they give the ADHD diagnosis, but it's like kind of with the like, and there's a lot of trauma here. You know, mm-hmm. the child's been through a lot recently, so not totally sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I could have said more eloquently than that, but it's like even the psychologist is like, it looks like ADHD, but based on the life events that have been going on in this child's life, is it? And to me, it also brings up this conversation of labels, and it's like I have such a tricky relationship with labels because I actually don't like them. I don't like pigeonholing people into these boxes, especially like we're talking about. Look at how difficult it is to know, like what, like these symptoms look the same. What is it stemming from? And then I think we can kind of pigeonhole people in these boxes that keep us, that it can be kind of stigmatized and separate mm-hmm. us from one another. And, mm-hmm. and I understand the need for them in the current society we live in order to access support, in order mm-hmm. to gain information that can help us. Like, so I understand why we have them based on the environments that we find ourselves in, but just from like a philosophical perspective, like from a really like a heart-centered perspective, it's like, can't we just meet people in the experiences that they're having? Like, do we need to be like, you're this? Because oftentimes there's so much complexity. People are multiple things, you know, and like, and it could be stemming from multiple things. And it's a very, very difficult, even if you have a thorough neuropsych, for that psychologist to truly know the depth of this person's experience, to give them like, oh, 100% this is what's going on. Maybe it's part of what's going on, you know? And, but what if we were able to like meet people where they're at? Like, what are you going through? Like, what are you experiencing? And let's meet those symptoms in a way. If your symptoms are demonstrating that you're in shutdown in your nervous system, and they're demonstrating that you're having trouble with task initiating and procrastinating and perfectionism and all of these things that could be ADHD, does it matter which one it is, or can we just meet you from a place that actually is going to be healing? Because labels don't heal, right? Like there's no healing in the label. It's like, okay, we got the label. Now what? You know, I was given the label at 15. It was just like, there's your label. Here's your medication to concentrate. But there was no healing in my experience. So to me, that's where the juice is like, how do we like meet people more holistically from what in their experience and give them what they need from a foundational level?
Mm-hmm. And hear what they're saying they're experiencing.
Yeah.
Like, really deeply listen to it. It's pretty profound because I like to do meet and greets with both parent and child and then the kiddo on their own. And it's really curious because I went into this field, right, because I love helping people. But what I've been, you know, humbled continually is that the job isn't to fix someone. There's, right? It's rather to, you know, I can come from a neuroscience perspective with things that we've seen are supportive, but essentially it's, a lot of the work is just like the child better or articulating or sharing, you know, what feels best for them.
Yeah.
And where they feel like they need support or when it gets really hard or what doesn't feel supportive, even though all the adults think it will be supportive.
Right.
And it's kind of, you're not fixing, you're just holding space and offering tools when needed. Right. If the child feels like they align, and just walking side by side as they're kind of navigating this.
Totally. And I think that's some of the thing that's a challenge for me with labels. It's like, it comes back to that. It's a problem, which that rubs me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Like it's a problem. Like it's deviating from some sort of like normality that needs to be fixed. So now we've got this label and here are all the things we need to do to make you correct or right, functional or healthy or normal. And like that whole mindset is just like, it's so loaded in how we can take that on as individuals.
I think, you know, we're also, I have these conversations with a lot of my high schoolers. I love working with high schoolers. They're just, they just really are just so honest and just, you know, a lot of my students are just highly creative.
Yeah.
A couple of them are incredible artists, but the minute they were put into an art class, they completely shut down. It was they failed. And these are profoundly gifted children.
Which says a lot. It means our art classes aren't actually creative.
Or it's just, is the flow of human nature. So this also comes back. There's also this funny little area of the world I've tapped into as well of education mirroring nature, which is, or this kind of philosophy, right? Which is this thought, spoken to a couple of educators about this, and it just really connected to me. But when you look at nature, it's not always blooming.
No.
It's not always producing. It's not always thriving and migrating and moving. There's a lot of rest. There's a lot of introspection. There's a lot of growth, and you don't see the growth. It's under the surface, right? Like using nature as a metaphor. But I think, I feel very deeply about our education system and also just how traditional businesses are set up is not really naturally in flow.
No, not how we naturally thrive as a human,
as a species.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And that, I feel like that, you know, because I came from the classroom environment and helping like families create strength-based plans for their kids in the classroom because I was a teacher. But as this conversation that we're having here is what I kept bumping up against, kind of like how you're saying you're having your own journey of bumping up against things. That was my bumping up against how do we make a difference and really help families when this is the system, this is the structure, unless you can homeschool, which like you mentioned earlier, not everyone has that luxury, right? And it's, there's so many wonderful ideas of ways that we can create schools. And I think that's coming, honestly, in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Really, that's the future of our education system. I do too. But for right now, it's like, is really writing a student a strength-based plan and giving that to a teacher who is overwhelmed, hasn't been trained in her education, you know, process to actually meet the needs in a strength-based way of neurodivergent kids, has tons of demands on him as an individual. Are they really going to be able to create these environments off of these plans I was writing, you know? And it came back to like, how do we as families, how do we as parents, how do we as moms, like, we're at the root of this. Like all the things that you're saying here when you work with students, like when parents can start like looking at themselves and being like, okay, I'm a product of the system too. I probably have the same negative thought loops running, which is why my kid also has those thought loops running. Not entirely. There's also like the world out there. But, and I say that without like blame, it's just truth. Like they model what we do, right? So if like we're hard on ourselves and we've got this energy of being a perfectionist or feeling like something's wrong with us, like they are going to pick up on those things. And so it's like coming back to like, how do we from a foundational perspective actually make a difference in kids' lives? And I feel like it really starts at home, families, and how we relate to ourselves as adults so that then, you know, what we give to ourselves, we can then give to our kids. But if we aren't giving it to us, we're literally unable to give it to our children. And then we have a piece of paper that says do all of these things in the classroom, but like, is that actually making a difference? To me, the difference comes in like, as moms, how are we showing up for ourselves so that we can create that relationship with ourselves that is safe and secure and connected, and we know how to meet our nervous system so that we can show up and co-regulate and connect with our kids and shift these mindsets around all these things that are being thrown at us in the world, and then apply these strategies that we do. Yes. And how do we, because we are in a system where maybe the way we think and thrive isn't a match for the busyness and all of it. So we need strategies to make this work, right? But it's blending, right? You can't do one without the other is what
I'm saying. It's an adapting. Yes. I had this great conversation with almost senior. And they said, oh, I love working with this kiddo. And they said, you know, I just want to burn it all down. Like this whole system is messed up. I don't want anything to do with this. And I said, are you okay? We can totally do that. I'm totally game to like just be on this journey with you. Curious, you want to go to, let's call it art school, just to, and they were like, no, that is 100% what I want to do. I want to go to this university and I want to go to this school. And so in that moment, the student and I then had to say, okay, so we've got your dream. We've got something that feels aligned, like this is your passion. But we also know that there are the hurdles that we kind of have to jump through in the way that the society is structured.
Yes.
So my job as an executive function coach is to support you in navigating the automatic negative thoughts that may come as you try to get through those hurdles, help you strengthen your goal-oriented persistence, and reduce the perfectionism around some of this crap that we've got to do, right? These applications, we can get through them. We can do this, right? So maybe I always am someone who maybe when I get older, I'll just be like, I'm 100% on this side of the fence. But I've always been someone who kind of values balance and knowing that we can't 100%, at least in my space and time, destroy it all, right? But just saying maybe what it's all about is understanding, for the child to understand themselves as a learner, what environments, learning environments they thrive in, like how they want to present information or how they want to create, really getting in touch with their nervous systems. And then knowing that there are sometimes these little things like paying taxes or these getting your driver's license that are fundamentally frustrating, but we can navigate them and get through them. So we're also building a tolerance for some of the discomfort that has been created by this, by the society we're in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that can be met also from, it's like from a nervous system standpoint of creating greater capacity to be with the things that are uncomfortable. Because a lot of times we think nervous system regulation is like, again, the tips and tricks to make us feel calm, you know, and a lot of it is understanding how to be with what is uncomfortable and hard. Yeah. And expanding that window of tolerance to be with that, because it is inevitable, like you said. Like, we all have to do things in life that are like not fun and are going to be hard. And as ADHDers, those monotonous, boring things are like torture. And so it's like coming from it from like, from a nervous system place and from an executive functioning. How do we merge that together? Because it's you need both, right?
Yeah. So it's like that ability to tolerate some demands, but not numb our authentic self to all of the excessive demands that don't align. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like creating a life that works for you. So like there's choice and flexibility there. And that like, okay, like you were saying with the student, figuring out like, this is what lights me up. I want to go to this art school. This is how I want to structure my day. This is how I want to work. This is what, and I know there are some things that are going to come along with that, that are going to suck and are going to be hard. And how do I move through that? And it's this balance, right?
Yeah. Oh, this is good stuff.
I know, it's good.
Melissa, every time we talk, I'm like, it's like a breath. It's just,
well, we're co-regulating.
Yeah, and it's heavy stuff. And I think, you know, you and I also talked about how do you carry the weight when you are, whether you're a parent struggling, you're a teacher struggling, you're a therapist struggling, like you're trying to support a neurodivergent child, but you're struggling yourself. And so I think that there is, that's why you and I have always talked about the importance of like parent support and parent coaching in addition to working with the student.
Yes.
Because they're the ones who are going to be interacting with the kiddo.
Yeah.
90% of the time, I'm just dropping in for 45 minutes. So it's really holistic approach to what are we noticing? What are some goals we're setting? And what are some strategies that we're, and kind of this consistency and predictability of the strategies we're trying to put into place as a team.
For sure.
The unit.
Yeah. And it can be hard because I'm a mom. I have ADHD. I have kids who are also neurodivergent. And it's, when you're supposed to be, you have the same challenges as your child sometimes, and it runs in families, so it's a common experience, and you're supposed to be the prefrontal cortex for someone else when that's your area of challenge. Like, it's really hard, you know, and we are more sensitive, so we are more easily dysregulated, and these aren't tools that we're taught in school or growing up, most of us, like, on how to, like, regulate ourselves. Like most of us are on autopilot, like doing what our parents did, which most of us aren't that lucky to have had parents who were super self-aware at that point in time. And so, yeah, I think it's coming back and realizing that as mothers, we need support too, because there's so many demands on us, which only makes, if we do have ADHD, it just exacerbates those symptoms. And it can just feel like we're spinning and just trying to hold things down, and everyone needs us to do everything, and we can barely like take care of ourselves. And then how are we? And then it's just an added pressure of like, oh, and by the way, you're the one who needs to hold that calm, regulated space for your kid, because they're flipping out because you're kind of flipping out. Like that's a lot. Yeah. You know? And then the rumination and the shame spirals around, you're not doing it right, you're not doing perfect, like all of these things we struggle with. And I think it's really meeting families from this more holistic space of like realizing that, no, the parents need support too. And parents as individuals, as how they want to show up in life, in all the relationships, but as a parent to their child who needs them in a certain way. And when we invest in ourselves as adults, what I've found is then that it makes all the things that our kids need and all the ways that you're stepping in and supporting that child, it just lands. Like, so it you know what I mean? It's just different. It's not so much pushing against something. It's like it has a soft spot to land because the foundation has been established.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's why I think it's really exciting that you and I are going to start playing with the idea of supporting some families from a holistic lens, right? Mm-hmm. And creating a package where we are going to do this together, to blend these two worlds, to really meet people from a holistic perspective that identifies all the areas that are impacting how they're struggling, and support moms and kids.
And kids, I know. Yeah, it was when we first chatted about this. I also just, I feel like we really complement each other's perspectives when it comes to understanding the learning needs of a child, but then really wanting to connect with the parent to help just the whole team thrive. And so that was this little part of my offering where I was like, what Melissa offers, this is such a beautiful coupling, because we're hitting it from this neuroscience-based, like educational therapy type approach, but then also really grounding into the root of it, which is nervous system, co-regulation, connection, mirroring, and a lot of these somatic tools.
Yeah. And reparenting ourselves, retraining our brains and our thought loops that can have us on autopilot, living our lives in a certain way, and empowering the parents who are holding the space for these kids in a way that these strategies that you're providing kids can really, really land and feel more easeful and just peaceful for the family.
Yes, it's exciting. I'm excited for this offering. I think it's beautiful and definitely supportive from a variety of angles.
Yeah. No, I'm excited too. And it's just fun to work with you because I feel like we've
been
together so well.
I'm really excited. I mean, it's just it's so nourishing, and it's just, I love brainstorming and collaborating with you. We always have. And so it's just an exciting next.
An evolution. Yeah. Okay. Well, you guys, if you're listening and you are interested, I'm going to drop it in the show notes, just a link to reach out if it's something you're curious about. And it was just so great talking to you, Megan. Thanks for
a lovely today. Thanks for having me.
Okay. We'll talk soon. Thank you so much for joining me. If you like this podcast, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and share it with a friend who might need it. And if you're curious to discover where you're at in your nervous system right now and would like tools to support yourself in whatever state you're in so you can create more safety in your body to feel more grounded and connected with yourself and others, I've created a free quiz that allows you to discover your current state right now and receive a practice with your results for immediate support. Check out the show notes to grab it. I cannot wait to chat with you next time.